Coming up, it's John Latimer and his Phenology Report. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for listening, whether you are listening through the Season Watch podcast or through our website. We sure appreciate you caring about nature. I know that sounds strange, but it really matters to us, people connecting to the land and the critters and all the things. In John's Phenology Report, we're going to hear about the ongoing saga at his house and what he's doing to not have bears hang out at his bird feeder, who stole some suet from him this week. We're also hearing about late summer wildflowers as we're watching outside the KEXC windows here on the banks of the Mississippi. The wild bergamot has really been in bloom over the last few weeks. And in his report, John gets to insects like Japanese beetles and the Carolina grasshoppers. Let us know what you are seeing. We would love to hear from you. Leave a voice memo. You can do that through speakpipe.com/KAXC. We're independent. We're local. We've been here for 50 years and are the oldest rural public radio station in the nation. Thanks for listening to Phenology on KAXC.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is, of course, the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Pause to look at a bird outside the window. Nothing unusual about that. If you know me, I'm pretty much distracted by everything that has to do anything with nature. So just a quick look. And since it was a bird, I'll start with birds today. And the following birds have caught my attention this past week, including yesterday, a red-tailed hawk that was probably a juvenile because it was sitting on a fence post right along the edge of Blue Heron Drive. And honestly, I wasn't 15 feet from it, and it just turned its head and looked at me like, what are you doing? And I looked at it and thought, what are you doing? And got a good close look at what probably was a juvenile red-tailed hawk. There are a family of kestrels along Blue Heron Drive, and there are six for sure, maybe seven. It's hard to count them all. And they hang out by my neighbor's house in the trees, and they swing out over the fields in their unbelievably delicate and lovely flights. And it is just a thrill to come out of my driveway and see them all sort of scatter and whip this way and that way across the land. It must be frightening to be a grasshopper in their presence. Barred owl was sitting on one of the fence posts in my garden the other morning, and he was guarding the garden, I guess. It was 6 o'clock. It was pretty light out, and I came out the door, and all of a sudden it flew off from the post and up into a tree really nearby, and I was going, whoa, look at that. That's pretty exciting. This past week, I saw my first really significant flock of crows, and there were probably 40 birds, and probably that will swell to maybe over 100 before they're done. The sandhill cranes have been turning up the turf along the edge of Blue Heron Drive and looking for grubs. Ravens, there's a family of ravens. There are six or seven of them that are hanging out in the fields and eating, I suppose, grasshoppers as well. The fields have been mown recently and the grass is not yet 8 inches tall. So there are just a bunch of them out there. And, that's our brown thrasher. Yeah, more birds outside the window. So I've been checking those out. The ravens, they're one of my favorite birds. They are my favorite bird. The loon, there was a loon on Crooked Lake. They have been gone. I think the trumpeter swans have driven them off. Crooked Lake is really small, only 70 acres, and the trumpeter swans are big and they're bullies and they don't like other waterfowl, other animals in their neighborhood. And, the loons have come back each year in the spring and then disappeared. And this past Sunday, there was a single loon out on the lake. He wasn't calling. He was just hanging out. And I looked at him through the binoculars. He's diving and fishing and doing what loons do. But there was only the one, and I did not see the trumpeter swans. They were either, they did not have a family this year. At least I haven't seen any cygnets with them. I've seen them, the pair of them along the edges, and generally they would be, they would have their young with them if they had young. And this year I have not seen any. So I think that they are probably, they were unsuccessful. I have juvenile birds of every stripe and color, nuthatches, both red and white-breasted, chickadees, purple finches, evening or rose-breasted grosbeaks, all of the woodpeckers, downy, hairy, red-bellied, and pileated. All juveniles of all of those species are coming to my bird feeders pretty regularly, so I get a good look at all of those young birds as they learn to master the bird feeder and the suet feeder. So, and speaking of the suet feeder, we had a bear in there the other day, and the bear kind of took the suet down and ate the suet cake. And so then we've been taking the suet in each night and the seeds and sort of denying it that little nutritious snack. And the bear has learned its lesson, I guess, and has gone off in search of better food or better food providers. I don't know. Probably nothing better than a suet cake for a bear. That's kind of a lot of calories in one big bite. But I have pulled it in every night and put it back out every morning. And the woodpeckers are certainly appreciative. The other bird that I wanted to note is the red-eyed vireo. And the red-eyed vireo has been singing in my neighborhood, and it is a lovely song, and I have often tried to characterize it. Here I am, look at me, up here. Here I am, look at me, up here. And I decided that that really doesn't do it justice, so I have I've gotten Heidi to find a recording of the red-eyed vireo, and this is what they sound like. That wasn't the one that I was expecting, but they do sing this time of year. They're one of the few birds that do sing, and their song is a bit of a melody. It's a bit, you know, there's some up and down to it. And if you're hearing a bird that is singing pretty clearly and pretty openly, and you can't find the bird, it's probably the red-eyed vireo. They, by the way, are making, they have made their nest, and they always nest in a fork, usually within 10 or 15 feet of the ground, in a shrub or a tree, but they're going to find a branching fork, and they're going to suspend their nest below the fork, and it's going to be held to the fork in the branches by spider silk and some grasses, and they're going to wrap that all up, and then they're going to hang this little cup of a nest down below. So once the leaves are down, you'll be able to discover the red-eyed vireo nests that are around you and have been there all year, and we have not noticed them, and I'm with you on that. Trust me. It's not like I know where they are. I'll find them when the leaves are down, and they will become quite obvious. Looking at some of the plants that are in fruit right now, and those would be pagoda dogwoods, black chokeberry. There's still a few chokecherries on my chokecherry trees. The juneberries are gone from the varietal that grows in my yard. I have a varietal that I bought from a nursery that grows in my yard. Doesn't get very tall, and it produces quite a few berries in its time, but it is long since completed its fruiting cycle. There is a juneberry, a wild juneberry, back in the woods around my house that I check on regularly, and the last time I checked on it, it had a fair number of berries, not a lot, but significant number, and the berries were beginning to ripen. So two different plants, two different varieties of plants, and two different timings with them. The showy mountain ash, that is the wild, that is the native mountain ash that you're going to see. You're going to see a lot of mountain ash in town that are not showy mountain ash. The showy mountain ash is a native tree and grows here. It is, if you're looking it up, it's called Sorbus decora. And the showy mountain ash, I have one that's probably 35, maybe 40 feet tall. And the berries on it are mostly green, but you can start to see that they're changing a little bit, pushing a little bit toward the orange color. The black chokeberry, I have a varietal of that one as well, and it grows very tall, produces these lovely fat berries. I have a native one that grows back in the woods, and the commercial varietal had almost no fruit this year. Last year it was loaded with fruit. This year, almost none. The native species back in the woods has a much smaller berry, but it has a pretty consistent crop. Last year and this year, pretty consistent number of fruits. They are not ripe yet. If you're looking at the tag alder, the speckled alder, the fruit, this year's fruit is now a green berry about the size of, what would it be the size of? Bigger than a Juneberry, smaller than a grape. But they are kind of rough. They're going to become those dark brown little pine cones that you see on the tag alders. And calling them pine cones, of course, is a misnomer because they are actually, they're a seed cone, but they are certainly not on a pine. They're on a speckled alder, so don't hold me to that. But if you also are looking at the speckled alder, you'll see that next spring's male flowers are hanging on right now. They began coming out a couple weeks ago, and now they're about an inch, maybe an inch and a quarter long, and that may be as large as they get. And then as they are green now, and as they ripen, they'll get more purple, and next spring they'll be quite spectacular as they begin to stretch out in early April. Some of the flowers that I've run across this past week, including three different kinds of asters. I had the flat-topped aster. That's a white one, and obvious according to its name, big flat top of flowers on the flat-topped aster. The large-leafed aster is growing in the woods. That's the one with a blue flower and big, big leaves. And the large-leafed aster, the flower, it's a ray flower, like think of a daisy, but think of a daisy where someone has gone in and plucked out a few of the rays sort of randomly. The large-leafed aster never has a complete flower with nice even rays all the way around. It's always got some gaps in there where the rays don't form. And then there was a blue aster in bloom down near the lake, and I struggle with asters and goldenrods. Both of them can be very difficult to identify. This one, looking at the leaves, it might be smooth aster, but it really doesn't meet all the requirements of smooth aster. It's got a very hairy stem. The leaves are alternate. They clasp the stem. They're very narrow, lanceolate, I would call them. They're like maybe 1/6 as wide as they are long. If you look very carefully, there are tiny, tiny teeth along the edges of the leaves. If you know the name of that aster, hairy stem, alternate leaves, clasping with long, narrow leaves that have almost invisible teeth on them, just tiny, tiny teeth. If you know the name of that aster, send it along. I would love to find out because I spent way too long looking through Minnesota wildflowers yesterday trying to pin it down. Among the goldenrods, the daily dose of phenology this morning talked about the gray goldenrod. It is in bloom right now. a kind of a compact finger-like structure of bright yellow flowers, doesn't spread very much. So gray goldenrod is blooming. Also this week I found tall goldenrod and Canada goldenrod and flat-topped goldenrod. Now the flat-topped goldenrod is sometimes called grass-leaved because the leaves on the flat-topped goldenrod are very, very narrow, like less than a quarter of an inch wide and about 3 or 4 inches long. The flat-topped goldenrod, like the flat-topped aster, the flowers are all sort of at the same level, and they're very, very small compared to the tall goldenrod and the Canada goldenrod. Tall goldenrod and Canada goldenrod, if you feel the leaf, the tall goldenrod is really rough. It's going to feel like sandpaper, and the Canada goldenrod is going to be pretty smooth. So those are all blooming, all of the asters and goldenrods, and there'll be more of both of those coming along. Black bindweed is still in bloom, although some of the leaves of the black bindweed are starting to show color. Sow thistle is blooming. That's a tall dandelion-like flower, except that the leaves look like, like thistle leaves, kind of got pokey little ends on them, and they're kind of deeply cut, a bit like a dandelion leaf. But the plant itself is going to be 2 to 3 feet tall and sometimes even more. Common skullcap is blooming in the swamps and wet areas. Also hemp nettle, same thing. Rough hawkweed is blooming. Jewelweed is probably at its peak. The jewelweed is the one with the exploding seeds. If you see these bright orange trumpet-shaped flowers, they've got a big bell opening on them, and then they kind of hook back and flip around at the very tail end, get very, very tiny. And it's a hummingbird-pollinated plant. The hummingbird goes in and tucks in there to get the nectar, which is way in the back, and in doing so, the flower just leans down and puts a little dab of pollen on her forehead, and when she goes to the next flower, it moves that pollen over. I saw maybe my last columbine, Canada columbine, in bloom. Wild bergamot is probably close to its peak of bloom. Cup plant, which is not a common plant here, but I have some, and Dick Thoyne was kind enough to give me some of his, and so that's the reason I have some. The leaves form these giant cups along the stem, and the flowers look like sunflowers, and they get quite tall. Mine are about 8 feet tall, and that seems to be about where they end up. Boneset is blooming. Joe pieweed is still blooming. Wild rice. I don't know if wild rice is blooming or if it's gone past that to the seed stage. I can't tell because I can't get out to it, but there is a good crop of wild rice this year, especially on my lake due to the low water. Fireweed is blooming, and fireweed is that magenta-colored flower that you see in big patches and ditches along the edges of the roads. It is absolutely gorgeous and probably at its peak of bloom right now. Interrupted fern is starting to show the first browning of the fall. Spreading dogbane, the first spreading dogbane leaves are turning yellow. I got a note from Kevin Friesen, and he asked about Japanese beetles. And I had been seeing Japanese beetles here and there, and this last week on the wood nettles, they were absolutely thick, and they were procreating, making more Japanese beetles. These beetles attack up to 300 different species of plants, so it's pretty hard to figure out, you know, where they're going. But if you have them, you're going to have leaves that are skeletonized. Think of eating all of the interconnective tissue on a leaf and leaving the veins structure behind. If you're seeing that, you probably have Japanese beetles. If you have them and you can manage it, probably the best thing to do is, like this time of day, get out there while they're still kind of drowsy and cool from the night. Get a jar with some soap be water in it and then just knock them off the plant into the jar. That's probably the most effective way. I read something about pheromone traps where you scent out a scent that attracts them. The problem is it brings in more than you're going to catch. You'll catch a few, but you're really just increasing the population in the area, which is not exactly how you want to do that. And finally, this week, the Carolina grasshopper. That's that one with the black wing and the kind of cream-colored border on it that you see flying about, sort of sandy brown in color if you see it sitting on the ground. The males are flying right now about 3 feet off the ground, sort of hovering in place. And there's a female down below them, and they are trying to prove to her that they have the stamina and the wherewithal to be the mate to that female that's down below. So keep an eye out for hovering Carolina grasshoppers. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week.
Support for Season Watch Podcasts comes from Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas, with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.